Honorable members, and good morning everyone here. Very much once more for making time to attend this meeting. It's going to be very important that you know, we still keep the integrity of the process intact. I know it may be a very difficult thing. There has been a lot of talks amongst us, different political parties, but ultimately we have to come up with what is best for South Africa. And at an appropriate time, I will actually be recapping on how far we've come with the process. But right now, I would like, as I said, previously I promised you that we will have to consider the minutes of the meetings that we've had previously that we never could do that. It's very important because this process is nearing the end, and you must remember that we have to table the report before the 31st of August, and that's the mandate we got from Parliament, and we have as much as possible to be within that timeline. So members, you are most welcome, and everyone is most welcome. Without further ado, I just want to check if members are happy with the agenda before them. We only have about 4 items on the agenda. Is there any second of the agenda? The adoption of the agenda, thank you. Thank you, members. Okay. With you, you have 2 sets of minutes. You have the first set of minutes are the minutes that seek to capture. You must remember that interviews, if they are not capturing natural words of what actually transpired during the minute, during the interviews. And obviously, you can see this document is not a reflection of a 20-hour process. So, as much as possible, I think the administration has tried to pick up on critical points, but it should at least be adopted by the members, you know, just to that at least there is at least a new principle decision of this record being the true reflection of what transpired. And the good thing is that this is broadcast live, and therefore recordings will always be available should there be any dispute of fact in the minutes. Members, without further ado, are there anything we are considering the minutes of 11 and 12? And remember, when you say 11 and 12, it's because you members, it's one routine, by the way. So it doesn't, it must not, you know, appear as if we have 2 days. Okay, the cover page, members, is there anything that you think you have there? Pardon? Yes, Honorable Maisa. Oh, yeah, okay. Okay. Dr. Maisela, could you actually make sure that you do that? And Advocate Bongo also wants to be, his title to be recognized. Is there any other person with another title who wants his title to be acknowledged? Okay. Hey, Excellency, Fanda. Okay, no. All right, thank you, members. Can we ensure that members, I'm just appealing to the administration, please be consistent. If you are going to be using titles, don't downplay other members over the others. If we are all going to be Ms. I don't care whether I'm called Ms. Kosa or whatever. But I'm saying if you are going to be using the titles, be consistent, because this is a multi-party process, and sometimes people are going to feel as though there is some political politicking, and which is not necessarily the case. I know. I've worked very closely with you guys. Okay. Let's move on to the next page, members. Yes. Shibambu, I'm not sure if you are raising a point because you are doing some gesture that I'm not
sure.
On the front page or the second page?
Of these minutes of interviews, I don't know what is the wisdom of having a minute of a 20-hour meeting summarized like this, because there are so many things that are for them. I don't know what was this. I didn't hear you explain.
Okay. I said
yes.
Honorable Shibambu, I made it clear. I said he wanted to have an abridged version of what transpired. Obviously, should you require recordings, they are available. The good news is that this process is conducted live. And therefore, if you want a transcript, you can get a recording, or you can make that request to that you would like us to send this item down and get the transcript of what transpired during the 20 hours. And I would be happy with that. I don't have a problem. But if you want us to have a record that at least highlights what actually transpired on the 11th and 12th, this is it. And if you are disputing it, come forward with your point. Okay, Member, shall we proceed? Yes, Honorable Shibambu?
You know, like this, it's minutes. At least it should highlight what were the issues that were raised with each and every candidate. Not to generalize the questions that were posed to all the members in the format. I don't think that these minutes, for now and for future records, are of any help, because any person, let's say people who come to read these minutes and were never familiar at all with this process that we're raised in, they will never have a proper understanding of what transpired. My understanding of minutes is that even generations to come must get the essence and the context of the issues that are raised. But the way it's captured here, I think that we have priced over it in a way that is not of any good. Perhaps that what could be done could be to have far much more substantial minutes and then to consider that later. What we could consider could be the minutes of the last meeting that did the shortest of the five. And then we can proceed from that. Not this one of 20 hours meeting that has been now reduced into five pages.
Honorable Shibambu.
In an unsatisfactory way.
Okay. I hear you. Honorable Shibambu, my sense is that because this process, we must remember one thing. Some of the members came very late in the process of this committee, and it's going to be absolutely critical, Bonani and Christine, to probably get the transcript of the entire process right from when we started, because that is going to act as an official written record of what transpired. The reason for that is that so that everybody can actually appreciate what took place throughout the process. Remember, we said we decided to embark on this process that is transparent, and we involve members of the public and everybody else. Obviously, there will be some weaknesses in this process, but on the whole, we are trying to set a particular precedent for that. Is that acceptable, members? Shall we continue, members? Thank you. Okay, shall we move on to the next page three? And page four. And page 5. Respect members, I am saying, Honorable Shibambu,
with regards to the letter from the State Security Agency or Department, we specifically raised the concern that the letter was too judicial. I don't think it's reflected. So it must be stated that we raised the concern that the manner in which it was handled was extremely problematic. Prior the interviews and not done in a way that was helpful to the process. I think that must be recorded, whatever is the resolution, but I don't get a sense that such is reflected.
I think I do agree with you insofar as how the future was dealt with, because there were aspects that you are saying that which I agree with, but there was also a clarity that was made by the chairperson that the state security agency screening of vetting, because we're using vetting, whatever, we did say that it was done on all candidates. It was not singling out one candidate. It was done on all candidates, and I think that must be factored in. But, again, whatever that we are approving here, we must remember that there will be a transcript. And the good news is that we have recordings of everything. Yes, Honorable Shivan?
Yes, Chair. So minutes must reflect both what was raised as a concern and the clarification. It must say that members raised a concern about the letter from the state security agency, and then there was an attempt to clarify it in this context. And even when there was clarification, members still were not satisfied with the explanation. That must be recorded. It is reflected in the first page that is dealing with the manner in which we continued and proceeded the interviews despite the concerns. So let us be consistent in terms of how we reflect what transpired in the meeting. That is what minutes are for. But we must always reflect what happened in the meetings so that we know what are the context of some of the issues that were dealt with. Let's have the resolution that has been taken.
Okay, Honorable Shabangu, I'm hoping that you are not suggesting that the administration must record observations. Because if you are actually now saying that the administration has to make observations, then it's a very serious problem. Then that can't be minutes. Minutes must be the true reflection or the true reflection of the deliberation of any meeting. Honorable Masondo, I'm noting you, Honorable Shivambu.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I just thought that it maybe have you be useful to do what you suggested earlier on in relation to the entire record of the proceeding. That we can insert a sentence in these minutes that says that the details are available as the recordings. So that people can then refer to all the details and everything else and so on. And it can cut our route and just ensure that everyone else is provided the coverage.
Okay, members, I think after what we have said, the minutes have to be the true reflections of the deliberations, not necessarily including observations, because observations can be very subjective. We are only going to be relying largely on the written record, on the recordings. Yes, Honorable Shivan?
Certain.
Yes.
What was saying must be done in page 5 of the minutes is what has been done in page 2. In page 2, in 1.3, it says some of the members of the committee argued that the shortlisting process and the manner of interviewing were inadequate. It reflects what was raised as a problem statement in the beginning. And then it then illustrates what later on was a resolution. Then in page 5, there's not even a mention that some of the members raised a concern with the letter that came from the state security agents. That must be reflected because it's the essence of what was there. It's a matter of fact that there was concern with regards to the letter that came from the state security agencies. And it's not mentioned that it's as if it was not raised at all.
I think that is in order because obviously the subsequent processes, they do speak to that particular letter from the state security agency. I'm saying we are going to record. You could record that. And because that is absolutely critical. Okay. Welcome, Honorable Malem. I can see now you are calling Floyd to come and sit next to you. Please help me. Help me, Honorable Malem. Hey, this young man, help me. Okay, thank you. Members, so we are going with that qualification that has been made, can we then accept this lineage with the qualification that we have made, that there will have to be the transcript of the recording, that will actually be recording almost in 4 years, and also that part where there was that dispute occurred on the actual letter. So we are saying that should be captured as such. You may, in the way you are going to capture that, wish to visit the recordings. Ne? Thank you very much. Can we have a mover and seconder for the minute? Honorable Kunnoff Mooch, Honorable Secretary, support, second. Thank you very much. Let's move on, members, to the minute of the 18th of August 2016. Members, again, I need to stress this. The minutes are not necessarily going to be a verbatim, you know, deliberations. They are going to be the key highlights of the things. And obviously, as I said, there will be transcripts. So, members, let's consider the minutes of the 18th of August 2016. Your front page. Again, there was a correction earlier on, if you can be consistent with the titles. People are fighting very hard for these titles, you know. Okay, then let's go to page 2. Honorable Panka.
In the opening and welcome about the State Security Agency report, I remember resolved that we were going to raise the issue with the Committee for State Security. I think that should be reflected in the minutes.
Yes.
Okay.
I think today we also need to say, I just want us to try and be as correct as possible. Remember this position. It's not necessarily employment, you know, it's an appointment. So we have to find a better way of capturing that, because even the way we did clarify, we did say, you know, pre-employment, pre-appointment, pre-interviewing screening. Yes, members, we are still on page 2. Are there any other questions? Thank you. Let's move on page 3. Yes, Honorable Granoff, you are not at Honorable Shirambo. Can I just say something, a clarity here, before you come in, Honorable Granoff? Honorable Shirambo, you are going to be the one that will be participating throughout the process. Obviously, everybody, any member is allowed to participate. But, I mean, for the purposes of, you know, should we come to a point where we have to vote, have we decided how is it going to work? Or is it something that you will cross the bridge when you get there? Okay, no problem. Let's move on. Honorable Kuranov, and I did note you.
Thank you, Chair. I on paragraph 4.3, the committee agreed to reject. I would rather say exclude, not reject. Or a better word than reject.
Yes, I think, is that agreeable, members? English. Yes, Honorable Mwabes. We have only
one Gambia,
share very good English.
Yeah? Yes. Sure, I agree with what the other members are suggesting.
I also agree. Reject sounds very polite, you know. Okay. Another members, let's move on to... Oh, where are they? Is that? Okay. Is there... Yes, Honorable Shivam?
Chair, I was thinking that with regards to the names that fell, must be a brief reflection on some of the reasons that were provided there. Like, this is not too long anything. They must be, the record must be kept of a, so that those in 2013 that want to apply for office of public or tender will know that some of the candidates fell for the following reasons, if the minutes are reflective of it. I think that should be given in summary, because some of those that fell off because of specific reasons, that could be instructive for further reference in terms of how certain things were handled.
Honorable Shivamo, I thought that today we are going to try and use a much more polite language, You know, we're not going to meet people force. Yes, that time I said, because for a lack of a better way, we agreed, we understood what they meant. So, I do think that we can do that if so. Members, there is something that we will definitely have to do later on, and hey, you are disclosing me. You are not this side. Okay. Members, some of the names that we chose to drop off, there were no reasons that we given, and we will then, if we are saying we need to be giving the reasons, we will have to be consistent, and probably later on, because minutes are minutes, we can't manipulate minutes because they have to reflect what happened on that day. But maybe when we go through the other process after this, we may have to engage on why the other names were not, what were the reasons for dropping off some of the names? Because you didn't give reasons to all the names. We kind of assumed that there was some consensus around that. Honorable Shivam.
Chair, I'm thinking that after the process that went to engage in here, we're going to need the committee to consolidate a report that is going to be tabled in the National Assembly. Why don't we afford that meeting an opportunity to then deal with the much more reflective image that happened? Even the names that reasons are not provided, we can state that no member of the committee raised this name for shortlisting. And then the ones that were reasons, there must be context given that advocate Mamiki Goodman name because of the following reasons. You will come back to argue if you have got a point to argue. I'm finishing my point.
I understand
your question. We reflect on issues. When we deal with the consolidation of the report for presentation in the National Assembly, we need a much more reflective, because I don't think that the minutes in the manner in which they are now are reflective of what particularly transpired in the meetings that you are talking about.
Honorable Shafano. Yes, Honorable Mason.
Honorable Chair.
Dr. Mason.
Chair, I think it will be, although we are transparent, I don't think it will be fit and proper for us to say why somebody failed, because then it will back us to some other unsavory aspect of how we came to say somebody failed, somebody passed. It is a process that was transparent and recorded, and let's let David at that. Everything that we said in these meetings are recorded. So if anybody wanted to find out what somebody was executed, they can go to the records. Thank you.
Honorable Dr. Maisela, I agree with you, because you must remember that I did make an appeal to the committee that whatever that we are doing, we must not necessarily simulate, candidates. This was not necessarily the intention of this. Our primary intention is to get the best public protector for the Republic. So I think we agree that recordings are going to be there, and that's the beauty of having a transparent process. Thank you. Members, shall we move on? Is there a mover of this minute? With those corrections? Mover and seconder, thank you very much. Honorable Maisela, you are the one who is moving. And Honorable Kuranoff is second. Thank you.
Members,
I thought this is going to be okay. I'm not sure. Okay. We have two letters here. And let me say that I've also been inundated with letters, and if I were to really table them here, it will take forever. But for the record, let us put down some of the records that are here that have come to us through the office. And as I'm saying to you, I have received a lot of those records, but I didn't necessarily bring them here. But since the administration have made an effort of bringing a submission from the Open Advice Center, Open Democracy Advice Center, I wish to table this to you members. It's just the same as other, you know, submissions that we have received, which we really leave to the members of the political parties to consider. Okay. And there is also another one from of course it's not addressed to me because I'm not a sir, but it is from Debbie Weakling. Again, that submission is made to your members for consideration, and I'm sure you've circulated this. Thank you. Okay. Members, on that note, I thought that it's going to be important that once more we recap, because it's important as we move forward so that we don't disturb certain things in the process. This process, admittedly, is a public process. We are moving to the next item in the agenda. Okay. You with me, members? We are now on the committee deliberations on candidates, and I decided that my remarks, I'm going to reserve them for the appropriate moment, as I said earlier on, and I think it's opportune for me to do so. Members, as you know, this process is unprecedented, and as you know, previously we have never had such a public, such an intense public interest in this process. And such as the committee, collectively, we agreed that we have to encourage public participation, and in our encouraging members of the public to participate, it became very evident from the fact that none of the candidates that were nominated, none of them actually came from political parties. We never took a decision for that, but that was the nature of things, that's how they evolved. And members, we started to use a range of tools to probe the fit and proper. These tools included the Constitution of 1996, which is the supreme law of our land, the provisions and the stipulations of the criteria described in the Public Protector Act 1994. We also used the verification of information contained in the curriculum details of candidates, the public comments and objections were also used, thus giving members and civil society organizations a chance to scrutinize each nominated candidate and provide the committee with their own observations or views on each candidate. Political parties individually had to conduct their own due diligence, and they used that as tools as well to probe candidates on their fit and proper independence, their ability to act without fear, favor or prejudice. These were further factored in their contributions, deliberations and considerations during the interviews and discussions. We also selected the society organization, not the Corruption Watch, using their own resources to ensure that the committee was equipped with relevant information to enhance and ensure the integrity of the process. This information was not prescriptive, but was left to members, to the different political parties, to use it at their own discretion, either as tools or just for information. As a committee, we also came up with our own questionnaire, drawing from the JSC processes of selecting judges. This we also used to balance information, to check whether the information that was in the CV, the information that was in questionnaire, whether that information was in sync or whether there were any gaps or whatever. And some members did use these questionnaires effectively to probe their candidates. The committee further adopted key focus areas, namely knowledge, skills, experience, and moral belief system. Given the multi-factor nature of it, I don't think it would have been appropriate or it would have been ideal for the committee to go into the intimate reaches of those broad areas that we identified as key focus areas, because our own ideological orientation will kick in some of them. I must also put it on record that the committee decided to disregard the information derived from the South African State Security Agency. This further resulted in the inclusion of some of the candidates that were contained in that report, and thus that which resulted in the 5 shortlisted candidates. Members, there were the top 5 shortlisted candidates all have outstanding strengths, as members were repeatedly reminded to be rational and objective. In the consideration of the last top shortlisted candidates, there are some considerations that I would like to share with Mandibas, but not necessarily the weaknesses. I wouldn't like to go into the weaknesses because I do believe that all the 5 candidates have very significant strengths, and I know it's going to be a very difficult decision for you to make. Okay. I'm not even going to share with you what has just happened. I'm just going to proceed. Members, we shortlisted to Judge Wena and who appeared to be a woman of note, stature and standing. The effort she put in preparing for these interviews speaks volumes about her outstanding character. She has extensive experience in corporate law, which brings a critical dimension in our process for consideration. Judge Design, also a man who unambiguously declared his bias towards the poor and downtrodden. He is the most experienced judge with over 30 years experience in the human rights field. Advocate Lukaimane, I believe that dealings with the deadlocks at Financial Services Board on long overdue cases defined herself as a practical woman who does not just believe, but as something tangible to show on her own take on efficiencies and attending to tasks that may seem overwhelming. Advocate Busisiwe Mkhwebane, the youngest of all the top 5 shortlisted candidates, yet proved to have the balance of her temperament, knowledge, skills, experience, and paying attention to detail. She even practically demonstrated this by answering every question that members put to her and even remembering each member of the panel by name. Her execution of the most challenging task at home after demonstrated her agility and ability to rise above what may seem as a crisis. And finally, members, you shortlisted Professor Majola, who was undoubtedly an all-rounder with extensive international experience. And I'm just putting this to you, members, because whatever the deliberations that we are coming up with, I want you to remember that each of the 5 candidates did have their own strength. Otherwise, I do not believe that we would have shortlisted them. Members, all these men and women of this land were shortlisted, selected on merit. However, this does not mean that other 14 shortlisted candidates did not have outstanding qualities. In fact, all initially 73 candidates who were later reduced to 59 met the criteria as set out in the Act. However, difficult decisions have to be made as we are only looking for one public protector. On this note, let me conclude by thanking the members of the public who took a center stage during this process, as well as civil society organizations. I must also thank the media for ensuring that they kept this process on the public spotlight. No process is perfect. We strive for excellence. And I can assure all of you that we are involved in a continuous improvement process. Members, I also thank you for navigating through this growing process. and in elevating South African citizens above your own. Members, I must also say this. I know you may not like me saying this. You are actually very difficult people. and keeping you together required me to even, you know, sometimes I lost my temper, but I had to remember that, you know, this process is more important than what was going under my skin. So members, as said previously, ideally I would not like us to vote on this matter. It would be greater if we reach consensus, but whoever came up with candidate democracy acknowledged that decisions have to be made, and therefore a vote will be an inevitable option should we fail to come up with consensus, with a consensus candidate. Let us begin our final push, members. Over to you, members. I thank you. Thank you. Members, the procedure that I thought maybe you may wish to follow was to probably go through, because this is not just my preserve, maybe you may wish to go on each of the shortlisted candidates and probably make some highlights that you might want to share on each of the 5 shortlisted candidates. But I am leaving that to you. You've ruled me out, you've ruled me out before, so it's nothing new. So if you don't like my approach, come with a better one. I will consider it. Thank you, Honorable Shivambu.
Not sure.
I'm not anticipating what you're going to say.
Yes, I anticipated. No, that's what that to say that you did record to many chairs and presiding officers in this parliament. You did very well as chairperson of this committee, and we appreciate your effort of even when we obviously disagree. It's on. Yes, it doesn't like that. So we have to appreciate your challenge and the patience that you had with all members of the committee. I think that we had the relatively better spaces to articulate ourselves and argue different points. So you did well done.
Okay, Honorable Shivambu, I appreciate that. Okay, can we go on to the candidates, the by shortlisted candidates? I appreciate everything. Yes, Honorable Malema. Okay, Honorable Malema. And I know you, Honorable Bongo. You see, you are raising your hand and you are pointing my memory.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I just came to ask that you don't appoint the judge sign. That's what I'm here for.
Honorable Malema, please.
I thought you were debating already with the suitable candidate.
I thought you are going to be kind to me, because it's so difficult to navigate through these men and women of South Africa, you know? We are not yet there. Honorable Malema, in the order, we have Judge F. Winners, we have Judge F. Bizar, we have Advocate Tim Kwane, we have Advocate M. Lukaimane, and we have Prof. B. Machon. So these are the 5 shortlisted candidates, or your top, short or front runners, if you like. Okay. Members, let's go on to Eshwena. I've already shared with you my views on each of them. And remember, there is no perfect candidate here, but it's very important to highlight their strengths, because I think South Africa has to appreciate that, you know, these men and women were shortlisted based on merit. It was not a subjective process. Yes, Honorable Bongo? Don't respond to Honorable Malema. I've already responded.
So, I just wanted to establish what we start now talking to each of the candidates as we have done. Is that what I need to do now?
I had proposed that we go through each of the candidates if you would like to consider each one of them. And there was no objection to my suggestion, And I then thought, or I assumed that your client was suggesting that you are consenting to what I was proposing.
Can I let me get clarity.
Honorable, before you, Honorable Manema, are you...
I was just checking because you, in the report that you gave us, you started giving some of the strengths of all of them. So, do we now venture into doing the same, or we take them one by one in terms of, because I want to venture in terms of the recommendation of what this committee must recommend.
Oh, okay. Listen, don't confuse two things. What I was doing earlier on, remember I said to you, I'm reserving my opening remarks for the appropriate moment. And that's what I was doing. So what I was doing, if you like, was on a point of privilege, as I say. Yes, because I mean, I let you guys speak, and I never say, I say very little during this process, so I needed to also appreciate the people that you have shortlisted. How? So, if you want to come with the counter, it's fine, you may come with the counter, counter proposal. Honorable Malema.
So let's get this clear. Now, when you say Judge Wayne, it means you must speak on that one. Then we finish and then go to the next one.
Honorable Madam, this is what I was proposing.
Okay. No,
so
that's
I wanted you to either support me or come with a counter.
Alright, now we'll wait for Judge Isai, it's fine.
Honorable Madam, you seem to want us to die head. That's not fair. Okay. Honorable Bob, you wanted to speak, Judge Wayne, are there any comments from Judge Wayne, members? Honorable President,
thank you, Madam Chair. It is our view that Judge Wayne had an excellent interview. She was very, very well prepared. She has more than sufficient experience in the field that you will find necessary in this job. And I suggest that she is by far the outstanding candidate of the five. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, members, are you also commenting on Judge Wayne? Yes, Honorable Motsapo.
Okay, thank you very much, Assessment.
Sorry, Honorable Motsapo, you know, I have Bonani here, he's disturbing me, he wants me to give him a pen. So I'm looking for for the pen in my bag, you know? Yes, Honorable Motsapo.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Honorable Wayne, Honorable Chairperson, during the interview, she compared that while she was practicing since 1978 to 2011, she was specializing in corporate or commercial law and family law. Then she only has 5 years experience since 2011 to date on the bench. And therefore, Honorable Malema will concur with me. He said in Judicial Service Commission, representation of women there is really needed. And therefore, she must remain there. And she must learn a lot there in human rights. Because the experience which she has is in commercial and family law. I therefore recommend her, don't recommend her for this position. Thank you.
Okay, Honorable, who is the reason up? Purno?
Chairperson, I was fortunate, a member of the Judicial Services Commission when she was appointed. And she made a very good impression, you know, in that interview, and so in the interview as a public protector. But I even asked that evening that whether it will not be better for her to remain on the judiciary for the time being. And I've got no doubt that especially that division will be very poor without her being a judge there. So I think she should remain a judge.
Okay, I see Honorable Van Damme and I also see Honorable, sorry. I didn't see, you can come in, Honorable Van Damme.
Chairperson, if we were to use the argument that a successive person does not have enough experience in practicing public type law, then that immediately removes a number of people from the list. It removes Mkwebane and it removes the Kwamane because they both were not...
Honourable Member, going out and you can't... What's going on?
No, we must speak about the candidate on table. You can't leave your candidate and want to speak about other people.
Okay.
The time to speak about other people is coming.
Honorable Malema, Honorable Sandam, we are talking about Judge S. Weiner. If you have things to say about her, you may. And confine yourself to her. If you have incredible things to say about her, which I believe she does have, you may share. If you think there are some things that are weaknesses that you may know that you don't think we should recommend her for the position of public protector, you may also do so. It's up to you, ma'am.
Chairperson, I want to make an argument. Sorry if Honorable Malema doesn't agree.
Can you please speak to Weiner.
Okay. Without it is not fair to say that because she's only practicing corporate law, she's not suitable for that position. Because there are other people whose names I will not mention on this list who also only have a specific type of law. They haven't practiced law, but that hasn't precluded them for selection as public protector. So I'm just saying that is not a fair argument.
Okay. And member. Honorable Shibambu?
Thank you very much.
No, I have noted you, Honorable Hon, you will be coming after Shibambu. Honorable Mwade will be coming after you.
Thank you very much.
Can you hold your hands? I'm going to say to just raise them so that one needs to take some aid. He has already. Thank you. Over to you, Honorable Shibambu.
Thank you very much, Chair. To the Office of the Public Protector was established to primarily deal with abuse of state institutions, to deal with maladministration, undue benefits, undue delays, and things that relate to the public finance management processes and the municipal finance management processes, procurement processes. That is what substantially the Office of the Public Protector focuses on. And I think that with the attention that the office is receiving now due to the Constitutional Court judgment and what happened under the incumbent public protector, there is growing interest in the Office of the Public Protector. So we need someone who will hit the ground running, someone who has a deeper understanding of how the office operates and who has got practical experience in the public space. And obviously understands the law so that when we pass judgment, they are consistent with the law. I do not think that holistically Judge Weiner possesses those skills. I think that she is doing well in the current responsibility as a judge, but I don't think that she will hit the ground running. She will still have to familiarize herself with a variety of things in detail. It's one thing to understand the paper details of what the PFMA says and the practical implementation of it and how it has been validated. I know that in the past there have been serious considerations of certain individuals, but in the context that we are operating in now, in the context where the AG says billions of rand are being wasted on wasteful expenditure and a variety of things, will someone will be able to hit the ground running so that they can be able to have the public share to recover the money that are being lost? I don't think that Judge Weiner is a suitable candidate, so she must not be considered, she must fall.
Honorable members, Honorable Hon?
Yes, thank you, Chair. First of all, I cannot agree with the statement by Honorable Mutapa that the judge must still go and learn about human rights. I mean, I think that's an unfair statement. I think underpinning what we look for in our judges is a commitment to human rights as embodied by our constitution. So that argument cannot be sustained. Then secondly, it's quite interesting that the act itself says you need experience as judge and cumulative experience of 10 years as a legal practitioner or as a judge, and ultimately what we look for in the public protector is somebody who can investigate, find facts and apply the law. And in that regard, I think we all agree with each other that judges, per definition, are primarily suited for the job. So I think if we make out the argument that yes, because of gender considerations, it might be better to leave an exemplary judge on the bench, that might be an argument. But to say that this specific candidate will not be able to, from day one, perform the functions and the duties of the public protector, I think is stretching it. And it's not giving the specific candidate the due consideration she should be getting. Thank you.
Honorable Morris.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, I do not prevent you from much from what Honorable Shivam said. Yes, my purpose for my worry is the experience, the practical experience of the corporate. Where you only deal with corporate claims. Now, looking at the position that we are talking about, where we need somebody to be able to interact and work with ordinary citizens of the country. I do not think that Judge Werner is a relevant candidate when it comes to that one. I respect her credentials and the outstanding performance she displayed during the interview, but when we now look at the actual job that must be done, compare that with her experience, I do not think that can help us. I also support the move that we do not consider her for this position.
Honorable Stoff.
So when we drafted the legislation around the public protector, we said the person who is a judge of the High Court. Does not say you must have 5 years' experience, does not say what experience you must have, and we assumed that a judge will have the suitable qualifications. That is the first point. So Judge Werner is an exceptional candidate and I think would do an excellent job as the public protector. The challenge is, of course, having considered that we, when we drafted it, said a judge no matter who it is. But I think Mr. Chivambo makes an important point about hit the ground running. The question is, when you appoint judges, they have pending cases. And that would have been obviously considered when we drafted the legislation, that if you appoint a judge, they cannot hit the ground running immediately. They have part heard cases. And that is a consideration, particularly in view of the fact that we've got a high public profile, public protector's position that is now open with a huge backlog of cases, and that is just one concern from my side, whether a judge that we considered when we drafted the Act, you appointed a judge that will have cases to be heard, but that when you consider that, that it applies to judges that they've got cases that have to be heard, part of the cases. So I'll just lay that check. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Maisha.
Thank you, Chair. This mic is...
That's not fair. That's not fair. Just calling. No, speak, Honorable Maisha.
Yeah. I don't... Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
You can hear me.
Okay. Well, I was going to shift and use your whatever mic. Judges apply law. I mean,
can
everybody
hear
me?
Yes. Or maybe the other mic. Yeah. Honorable Monsieur,
thank you.
Yeah, I was saying that judges are trained to apply the law. And they are not social reformers. They just apply the law according to what they've been taught at the law school. And I admire Judge Werner, but I think that she, under her understanding of social relations is rather academic. And she did not even attempt to answer the two questions that I asked her about developmental state and about NDS, that is National Democratic Society. And a public protector is not a crime buster, but a nation builder who arbitrates, and especially protecting those who are aggrieved against the law. But if you are trying just to apply the law, and you don't understand the social implications and the reasons why the people got to break the law, or the people you are supposed to protect, you don't understand their social social being, it will be very difficult to not have the judgment biased in a way, not subjective, let's put it that way, instead of being objective, because objectivity is based on concrete things that are there. So if you just are going to think a public protector is merely there to stop corruption, not stop corruption, by the way, investigate corruption. And you can only investigate if there is somebody who reports, and so on and so on. So she will do good when people report that there was corruption. But you have to understand your society and try not to be adversarial, but to build and build a nation. We are in a state of nation building here. And we need people who can help develop cohesiveness in our national politics. So I think she's a good judge, but for now, what we want is somebody who has empathy for the downtrodden, and somebody who will actually understand the society in which they operate, not from an academic point of view, or from a subjective point of view. Thank you.
Remember, I'm not going to allow you to speak twice on a single person. That is something that will never finish. And if you can be considered to other members as well, because everybody wants to say something, so let's not be too long. In as much as we would like you to, you know, yeah, please, so that our case is not at this low. Okay. Honorable Usman?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I must confess that I'm partially covered by the colleagues that spoke before me to a point where I should say I'm covered and sit down. But of course, I would like to say what I say from my own angle. Firstly, I do admit that to be a judge is the qualification, but we have brought into the field and we have embraced other fields. While she is a very good judge, I have to add that her experience is very narrow. Throughout her career, she seems to have focused on corporate law. To an extent, I agree with those that let us leave her there, because there is more need for corporate lawyers on the bench than in the institution of public protector. Having said that, she is a very good judge, and the judge is the essential requirement. I must say, I agree with those that essentially the work that she'll be doing in the institution would be more about human rights than about corporate law. So I do agree with those who say, let's keep her on the bench. Thank you.
Okay, finally, Honorable Lema, and we are not going to have another round on Judge Wena. I think we will move to the next candidate after the finisher.
Thank you very much. I think what the Honorable Matapo said should be understood in that way, that you cannot afford to remove a female judge. The Judicial Commission has actually a case before the Human Rights Commission, but it has not met its constitutional obligation to meet gender balance when it comes to the bench. And for sure, wherever the Chief Justice is, he must be extremely worried that in what he is trying to do to recruit more females to the bench, we come to reduce them and make the Judicial Service Commission to fail in meeting its gender balance. So it's a valid point which you can't settle, and we cannot be the ones that actually contribute to removing women from the bench. We have to help the bench to have as many women as possible. The second issue is that, which I thought was not here, and I would have put it before Judge Weiner, that if you are confronted with two capable women, the other one being a white woman, the other one being a black woman, will we defer to appoint a black woman given the historical background of the country? So, does this help us to transform society when we've got many other black qualified females with a qualified white female, overlook this black qualified female and appoint a white female? You are actually reversing the gains of transformation. So we must not shy away from even looking at the racial issue when we look, consider this matter. So we are a country that comes from difficult past, and every decision we make should actually seek to reverse the imbalances created by the previous regime. So black African women are equally found here, and we're looking at a white woman against black women who suffered triple oppression. And as it were, I think that on the basis of these two arguments, we shouldn't even consider let's look at other means. Thank you.
Okay, members, I did feel that Honorable Malema was the last one in this round. We are now moving on to Judge P.I. If members, you can... I'm not going to start with Honorable Malema because he has just spoken. Can I see the hands again? Please, members, raise your hands. I see Honorable Masondo, I see Honorable Breitenbach, I see Honorable Bongo, who else? I see Honorable Maisel, I see Honorable Malema, and I see Honorable Motapo. There is something going on between the two of you. She's waiting for you to speak. And you are, you are coming. She's your chief, eh? Okay, I can see that. There's some protocol going on here. Okay. Okay. So let's hope so. It's still early days to say so. Okay, Honorable Masondo, over to you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. I wish to start off by just emphasizing the following points. The first one really is that the public protector, though expected to, amongst others, address high profile cases, and this is very, very important indeed, but we have also a responsibility to ensure that we identify a person who will be able to ensure that there's protection of the majority of people, especially the downtrodden and people who come from a disadvantaged background. So the bias towards the poor is imperative. And this is one characteristic that has been displayed by Justify more than any other candidate. And it's something that we should take into account. The experience of that Desai over 30 years and so on has been accredited, I think, by almost everyone. The fact that Jack Desai is not what is a yes man, I think is also very, very important. And the question of ensuring that the office remains independent is a factor that we should always take into account. But I want to conclude by saying that Jack Desai, like any other candidate, deserves consideration. And I think that he is a candidate worthy of being considered together with others. But I think that it's very important that we should not just brush him aside and be too dismissive in our approach.
Okay, Honorable Gaitanka.
Thank you. If you show that Judge Desai is a legend, that is one of the requirements in this. But I think everybody will concur, yeah, anybody who wants to be honest will agree that she had a very poor interview. And the public opinion supports this, if you look at social media. Section 193 of the Constitution requires that the person appointed as a public objector should be fit and proper to hold that position. So it's not really a requirement fit and proper, it's fit and proper to hold that position. And Judge Desai clearly is not. There's no control of his tongue. There's no control of his temper. The public protector should have an even temper. They don't be subjected to huge amounts of stress in this job and going forward is going to get worse, not better. And the shirt in front of the public protector that explodes every time somebody, what did he say, trucks her. He's going to get trucked a hell of a lot. And he has to be having huge amount more control of himself than he exhibited in the interview. He was rude, he was aggressive, he was arrogant. He was dismissive of the members of parliament for questioning him. His health is not good, despite what he says about his health. It's common knowledge that his health is not good. And it's also, in my opinion, he's not fit to hold that position. He has a poor record of productivity, and if you compare his record productivity over the much vaunted 20 or 50 years of experience against that of Judge Wiener in 5 years, then he performed the probably very, very poorly. His argumentative, his use of language is often inappropriate. He evaded questions and refused to answer them. He made some alarming statements about several issues, the most important of which was that he has an issue with the white middle class. I hope that whoever becomes a public protector understands that the white middle class is also a false part of the citizenry of this country and entitled to as much attention from the public protector as anybody else. It is my submission that Judge Desai would be disqualified from the puppet and could never support his appointment in this position.
Okay. Honorable Pongo.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Maybe let's start off by saying that today the Committee on Justice was meeting this morning. It was meeting against the backdrop of a serious judgment that was tabled by Judge Desai. It's a judgment that is about to assist millions of our poor people who get some garnishing orders, even if they're not even called to court and so on. So today we're sitting to look at amendments of a legislation to take care of what the judge has done. But secondly, it will be unfair. The Constitution provides very clearly that you can't discriminate a person. At least a number of things that you can't discriminate against, among others, is health. That's what is clear in the Constitution. So I don't think it will be good that you discriminate we can't do it on those basis. Chapter 7, my Honorable Masonde said, the letter says about over 40 years experience in the legal fraternity, and he's a renowned human rights man. Spent his almost entire life fighting against the apartheid government. But he must always be considered, but there are issues that we may have to look at, because he has been a judge for over 21 years already. And the legislation provides that if you are over 21 and you can go for retirement, it also provides that if a judge, you are a judge for life, which means the benefits, the accrual benefits, if it's generally taken in terms of the issue. Those are issues that we may have to consider very strongly, but the credentials of the judge are above almost everyone in terms of the CV and the practical experience of the judge. Thank you.
Okay. Members, Honorable Motapo. Sorry. Honorable Maisha, I asked you before. Honorable Malema. Honorable Motapo, are you now representing Honorable Malema? Things are happening here. Okay, Honorable Maisha.
Thank you, Chair. I think there's no gain saying that Justice Desai has got vast experience, legal experience. You can't be a judge for 21 years and not know what you are doing on the bench. And he was thrown into this milieu that he finds himself in, not through choice, but through hard experience of life. And that's why sometimes when he thinks about the persecution that he went through as he was struggling to make himself what he is today, he can't help but feel aggrieved, not nostalgia. It's not something nice that you hanker back to, but you understand the realities of life. Life buffeted him so much that today he could stand and say, this system is evil. He challenged the Ghanaian order law, and that is, like he said himself, is a defining moment or defining point in his long career as a fighter for the downtrodden. And nobody can take that from him. And maybe like Hodges, the guy who wrote most of the laws and things like that, he understood very well that here is a groundbreaking law that he, or judgment that will be translated into an abiding law. We can't take anything from him except that maybe we leave it to not only to the judgment society, to the court of society, right, to judge. But we are here to try and find out whether his weaknesses outweigh his good points. Thank you.
Okay, Honorable Malema.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. You know what came to my mind and why I object to this honorable judge? It's because he refused to answer the question on rape protest which happened at the IC. And you know, the issue of rape is a very, very, very difficult issue in our society. Now, you have a man who's now considered to be given such a huge responsibility, the man of the poor as prescribed here. We've got no opinion about rape culture in South Africa. Twice Honorable Shibambo put the question to him in other badges. Women generally who are the victims of this rape culture should themselves be extremely worried that you are going to have a public protector who's got no opinion on rape. We get no opinion about how women got treated at the IEC when they were protesting against the rape culture in South Africa. He unashamedly twice refused to budge on it. And this is supposed to be a man of honor, a responsible person. Whereas he himself has got the dark cloud hanging over him on the rape issue, which he had the platform to deal with it and show the whole of society how he feels about this terrible pain of rape culture in South Africa. The man didn't say anything. His temper is anything to go by. There is nothing for the poor there. Because the poor raises extremely petty things if you go through what those people always say. And sometimes you are going to have to listen to some of the things which you think are extremely useless, yet they are very important to poor people. And with such a man who is so impatient, a man who just speaks the way he so wishes and disrespects members of parliament to a point where you have to apologize. Can you imagine if such a person is going to deal with an ordinary poor person where there are no cameras? Now he's apologizing because cameras are before him. Imagine him in a squatter camp in Sejota, interacting with poor people, behaving in the manner he displayed here. He will never apologize because there will not be anyone to say to him, apologize, this is unacceptable. If a person can behave in such a way in front of the whole nation, can you imagine what that person does in a private space where there is no authority? Speaking to members of parliament like he's speaking to his subjects. Everyone who appears before this house must know these are representatives of the people, and at all times you must treat them with respect. But because for sure he's got some guarantee somewhere that this is his, he even treats members of parliament with due respect. You cannot create such precedents. But the last point I want to make is that, you know, feminist and gender activists should always be jealous when a female is replaced by a male. It's also undermining the transformation we are pursuing. We have a successful female public protector. And all of us should be wishing to have another female succeed in that public protector so that we prove to the doomsayers that indeed women are capable of holding strategic positions in society and making those positions to be successful. So I'm appealing that if anything, we cannot replace this successful public protector with that desire based on those three reasons.
Okay, thank you. Members in this order, Honorable Mopapo, Honorable Fantam, Honorable Hon, and Honorable Gurno, and Honorable Subambu. Oh, you're not on the list. Okay, Honorable Schwartz.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Schwartz will agree with me that the Bible says, forgive, so that you are also forgiven. Honorable Justice, Honorable Justice, apologize for the temper, for what occurred on that day. And again, Chairperson, that was just an isolated incident, so to say. I will never be intimidated. It was just an isolated incident. And to say he's rude, arrogant, and discriminating based on his health coming from an advocate, that's really disingenuous of that particular advocate. To say that, oh, what a man. And I need to be protected. No, she will never intimidate me. She knows me. We said
Honorable Mutapo,
she will never she will never intimidate me.
Don't allow your thought process to be disturbed.
Thank you so much. And today, Chairperson, in our Justice Portfolio Committee, we are dealing with
Honorable Bongo has alluded to, the issue of Stellenbosch judgment, a very progressive one, relieving the one which deprived the most vulnerable, their aliens, garnishing orders. The High Court, which was presided by judgment, which was presided upon by the Honorable Judge, declared Section 65J of Magistrate Court Act unconstitutional. She must stay in that committee. She knows. Hence, the amendment, Court Law Amendment Bill, which has before the committee today. And again, Chairperson, as my other speakers before me said, Honorable Judge has got 33 years of legal experience, in one of which he spent on the bench. And if, I still maintain, if there was something irregular, if he was not a fit and proper person to can be on the bench, the judicial conduct of Judicial Service Commission will be having his complaint, of which Honorable Malema and Gorenhoff says. Because Honorable Breitenbach mentioned that he's got a very poor record, we must not come here and work on perceptions. The Honorable Judge has got an excellent character. He's an activist in human rights. And in terms of Section 193, he's a fit and proper person to become our future public protector. Thank you.
Okay, members. Honorable Kanjan, followed by Honorable Honi.
Chairperson, much has been said about that garnish order judgment. Judge Duhai went out there on a one-man crusade to bring down garnish orders. He didn't. The case was fought for, pushed for by a private citizen. It wasn't him. All he had to do was give a judgment, and any other judge on reason of the law would have given that judgment. You can't come here and say, oh no, he's a hero who wrote how that kind of garnish order judgment. It wasn't him. The only thing he had to do was give a judgment. And then Honorable Shivambo mentioned that, when someone is in a hit ground running, someone else mentioned that the public protector had a backlog of cases. Now, let's look at the record of Judge Desai and his much-watched 31 years experience on the bench. In those 31 years, he's only had 33 reported judgments. That's essentially one judgment a year. Compare that to the other judge we have, which is Judge Mina, who's been on the bench for 4 years, and she has 77 judgments. We cannot have a public protector who is going to give us one judgment a year when there's so many issues facing South Africa. We need someone who's going to roll out a lot of reports. But on that basis alone is just not suitable.
Okay, Honorable Holmes.
Yes, thank you, Chair.
Come up that slot.
Okay, yeah. So you have, I think in your introduction you referred to us seeking consensus here. I think it's quite clear from the debate that Judge Desai is not the consensus candidate. There is certain sore points or things sticking out from his candidacy which cannot objectively be overlooked. The Honourable Mutapu said that him losing his temper during his interview was an isolated incident. Whilst we fully prepared to accept his apology, the fact is that objectively he did not withstand the scrutiny of the committee. And on his own version, he is and will remain what he called a controversial figure. On his own version, he's had run-ins in tea rooms with fellow judges. So this is not an isolated incident. This is, I would raise the far as to say that he gave us a very clear picture of his personality and his unsuitability to keep a cool head and level head, the cool head and level head we look for in our public protector. Dr. Marisela earlier in discussing the candidature of judge leadership, we're not looking for a crime buster but a nation builder. And ultimately, I think we cannot but conclude that because of all these souls sticking out from the candidates of Judge Desai, the probability is that he, as the public protector, will not serve as a nation builder. Thank you.
Okay, Honorable Sir.
Actually, we actually see we forgive him for what he might have done, but there are consequences to one's actions. There are consequences, and when one forgives someone, there are consequences, and that's why the issue does is raised. It's not in a judgmental fashion. That's purely for it to be dealt with. As the honourable members have said, he did not answer the question correctly when it's related to those incidents of rape, which are very, very pertinent. So I think that is a very important point. I think, Chairperson, again, when one's dealing with a judge, as I indicated with Judge Wiener, and I might have heard in the regarding hard-heard matters, because that's more at the magisterial level, but clearly there is a lot of outstanding work, such as judgments, that need to be delivered. And we do note that there were a concern expressed about judgments that were late when it came to Judge Desai, indicating that there could be another judgment that is committed to deliver. And I think the point I was trying to make is that judges cannot just in October start work immediately. There is outstanding work that needs to be done, so they cannot just hit the ground running. So that is a very great concern. But I think at the end of the day, when one weighs up, he's an excellent judge, and maybe he is needed, and the point was correctly made that he didn't bring that Stellenbosch University court case, it was a citizen that went to the Stellenbosch Legal Aid Clinic. He found a progressive judgment quite correctly, but he is not the one that actually brought the litigation. Then the last point is, on his own version, he has indicated that he is controversial and he is, he used the words, not a popular judge. So I think that do we want that legacy to go forth to the public protector? Maybe he should remain and be an excellent judge where he's given progressive judgments. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, members, let's move on to Honorable Shivambu.
Thank you very much, Chair.
For you, sir, do we have any other person who wants to speak on this particular charge? Okay, we are closing. You are the last person. But that does not mean you have all the time in the world, Honorable Shivambu. You are the last one to speak on this matter.
But it's not a reflection of relish that the actors of Honorable Judge Desai was an incident. It was a reflection of who he is. He even admitted that he's got a colorful character when it comes to certain issues. There are many reports where he lost his temper in areas where he was not supposed to. And that character, the temperament, is not adequate, is not suitable for an office that is going to be subject to public scrutiny and heavy criticism on a constant basis. So I don't think that we should consider him. And instead of, actually, outside of him answering the question about the rape protest, the IEC results, and the other question which he didn't answer satisfactorily, it's the question on whether the president of the ANC was on the wrong with regards to the Secure Income Fund report. And he was asked the first time, he didn't answer, and then he asked the question, and when he repeated the question that was the president on the wrong, his answer was that, no, well, we think that the national government was on the wrong. And this is a judge who knows that there is a sitting judgment in the constitutional court that says that the president failed to uphold, defend, and respect the Constitution. But he's not working around politicians. One of the most prominent achievements of the incumbent government protector was their courage to deal with public representatives, including the president. But if that gained too much attention, that brought too much attention to the incumbent government protector, someone who is not working around politicians. But already before he was a public protector, Judge Desai came to the interview to egg work around politicians. We cannot trust such a person. It looks like he got assurance from someone saying he doesn't want to offend and everything else. He should have demonstrated far much bigger courage than he did in the interview. I'm also not satisfied with his experience on how he is going to particularly manage the institution of the public protector, because there are institutional and legal issues that we spoke about in the last meeting. So those must be brought into consideration when we consider him falling. He must fall.
You are very good in making others fall. Okay. Let's move on to Advocate Mkwebane. I want to take Honorable Mwabe. Let me take Honorable Mwabe, Honorable Treke, Honorable Musimang, Honorable Gurnoff, Honorable Motapo, Honorable Bongo, Honorable Order, Honorable Maisela, Honorable Hon, and Honorable Schwartz, and Honorable Malema. Okay, and Honorable, you know, I'm dealing with petitions here. Yeah. You know, you know. Okay, Honorable Clayton Kwa. Okay, in that order, please, members.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks so much. My observation is a question that the candidate in question was very good, outstanding during the interview. She is a very brave, young, but experienced person. And what catch my eye as well is that she has worked for that office before. As a senior investigator in Gauteng. And to me, it shows that she is clear of what is happening in the office. She is clear on the nature of the cases that the office deals with. She is clear with the nature of clients in that office, which is the public. With those interpretations, I'm of the view that she is a best candidate to be recommended by this committee. I'm of the view that she can give us the public what we need from the public protector. I'm of the view that she can be able to do exactly what the current public protector is doing, to protect the public, the public, and also to make sure that the office itself get the recognition it deserves. With those words, so I fully support this candidate. Thank you.
Honorable Speaker, thank you very much, Chair. I propose that we recommend Advocate Deputy Shilam Kwebane as the next public protector of this council. I'm saying so, Chairperson, I think you'll agree with me in your remarks. You said she is the youngest of the all, but having this speaks volume. That's what I'm proud of. And she's a woman above all. And Chairperson, you know, South Africa is not doing well in terms of gender equality. We have been ranked number 18 out of 142 countries in terms of gender equality. So I think that it is our responsibility as this government, as this parliament, to make sure that women are represented in this, in all the decision-making bodies in our country. Advocate Mkwebane does have a sound understanding of the PSMA. She does have a sound understanding of all these procurement acts that we have in this country. Therefore, it makes her a very good candidate for the post. She has a very good managerial and administrative skills, and above all, her communication skills was excellent. She answered all the questions that members of parliament have asked, and Chairperson, I must confirm to you that she remembered all, even all the names of members of parliament who have asked questions. So this means that she's very good, and I must say she's fine, just like I said to Honorable Floyd. Definitely, Chairperson. That's why I said I recommend her to be the next public protector. She has a fine brain, Chairperson. Her experience, Chairperson, in the in the office of the public protector, because she has been waiting there as the senior investigative officer. There's another time where she was appointed as the acting provincial head in Gauteng, in the office of the public protector. She has been in the Human Rights Commission. She has been working in the Department of Justice and Home Affairs, and presently she's in the SIU. I think she has a lot of experience to serve in this post. To me, Chairperson, advocate this is a good candidate for us. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much, members. Honorable Simang, Prof. Person Simang.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm just remembering that I'm the person who actually nominated Advocate Mkhwebane. And when I listen to the colleagues that spoke before me, I feel like patting myself on the head that I did a good job. Because I endorse every word that has been said about it so far. You emphasized her age, chair, and you said she was one of the youngest, if not the youngest. And as she walked in there and looked at her, I was surprised that she was so young. But I was even more surprised when she dealt with the interview. You have said, chair, we are a difficult committee. And the media has described those that went through our hands as the people who went through a grueling process. To my amazement, she responded very positively and answered with a smile. And to me, that was a quality of maturity in spite of her years. She is also a lady of guts, because in that age, she had the guts to represent South Africa in China. And I'm glad to say, from what we know, from what we have read, she never disappointed. She is quite familiar with the office, as others before me have said. She worked in the office of the public protector for 7 years. And not just as an ordinary clerk, but as a senior investigator. And that's exactly what characterizes the nature of that office. It's an office where you will deal with a lot of investigations. And it's also pleasing to know that she has also worked in the Human Rights Commission for a year, which is also very relevant to the institutional private protector, because we're dealing with human rights. So, Chair, I mustn't waste the time. I strongly endorse those that see Advocate Mkhwebane as the future public protector of this country. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Simang. Honorable Kurnos.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will not repeat what was said before me. I want to commend Professor Mesimang for proposing this candidate. Just for the record, she's not the youngest. So she's not the youngest. So let's just get the record straight with regard to that. But there was no doubt she had an impressive interview. She had a good CV, but then she came to the interview and excelled. So I'm very comfortable that I think she will be a good candidate.
Thank you, that was nice, short and sweet. Honorable Tonga, no, Honorable Motapo, sorry, Honorable Motapo.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Ms. Mkhwebane Busisiwe Joyce, she conducted a very impeccable interview, very matured emotionally. Among the women, she was the best. And as my colleague,
I'm a woman.
I think so. No,
okay.
No, proceed. A University of Limpopo graduate, BTOC and LLB, and also a senior investigator for more than...
Interrupt. Honorable Mutunu, did you want to say something? Yeah? Okay. For more than 6 years or 6 years.
And she brings into the Office of Public Protector a variety of expertise. A variety of expertise. She among the, I've already mentioned that she served in the Office of Public Protector, Human Rights Commission as a senior researcher, as alluded to by Honorable Serge. And again, President, we must be cautious as this committee, not to keep on mentioning age, because it's one of, if we keep on mentioning age, very young and so forth, you know, in terms of Bill of Rights, we can't discriminate based on age, is it? It's one of the prohibited grounds, isn't it? So, I'm saying so. I remember even when the Democratic Party, we remember age.
Yeah, so I admit that I think I'm the first one to withdraw my mention of age.
Right. So, she looked very mature indeed. So, I won't hesitate to recommend her for the position of public protector. She was never emotional. Some candidates when we were interviewing, you never knew. Others will stand up when they were supposed to sit down. You know? You remember who I'm referring to? Who is this man? Ah, Mutumwaka. She was just perfect. I therefore recommend her. Thank you. Honorable Pongo?
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think Honorable Zambo says he wants people who can hit the ground running. I think he, also in view of that fact, Chair, she worked at the same office of the public protector in the past. She understands the issues around the office itself. But her experience in the Home Affairs does expose her to issues that relate to audit-related issues, and one of the main issues in the Office of the Public Protector is the backlog. So getting somebody who were exposed in a senior investigator in the same space will assist the whole thing to run smoothly. So I was asked a specific question, which I think impressed me the most, on the understanding of the Office of the Public Protector vis-à-vis the state. I think she came out very clear to the understanding what the Constitution says, what the Act is also saying around those issues. I think she also has some international experience because she, when she was at Home Affairs, she had to go to China and do some diplomatic missions there that were in the national interest. I think, Chair, that I support all the colleagues that advocate Mkwebane be the one that we nominate as a committee. Thank you.
Thank you, members. Honorable Hu?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I think from our side, we're feeling a bit ambivalent about this candidate. First of all, I think there's no denying that...
On your side, what do you mean?
I think from let's say, first of all, personally, but speaking on behalf of the party as well.
Oh, okay.
I think there's, first of all, no denying that she objectively speaking had a very good interview. So that was quite impressive. Also in terms of her CV and meeting the requirements set by the Act, one cannot find any fault. I think, however, we should be guarding against placing too much emphasis on her experience as a senior investigator at the Public Protector's Office and not to insult any of the predecessors of the public of the current holder of the office. But the fact is, the benchmark and the way this office operates only came into existence
after this specific candidate left as an investigator. Unfortunately, and members may disagree with me, the fact is that prior to the appointment of Advocate Madam Shella, the way this office operated, and that must also be a reflection on him being a senior investigator, was that complaints were not dealt with that intensively, and ultimately one had the impression that the office always aimed not to be too harsh on government. So, in my personal opinion, therefore, the fact that she was a senior investigator is not, during that specific period, is not necessarily to her advantage. Then, a lot has been said in respect of, and I know we're talking about this candidate, but the lack of experience in respect of certain aspects of law on the part of other candidates. The fact is, this candidate, I think primarily, is a civil servant. And whilst that may give you a good operational experience and knowledge of the PFMA, and maybe give you a specific insight on maladministration and even corruption, the fact is it does not necessarily give you the best legal experience. So if we are, as the Act points us to, looking for somebody with the best legal experience, this candidate, I think, also stands behind certain of the other candidates in the queue. And then lastly, it is something that must be mentioned. One aspect that was problematic in respect of her specific interview was that she did not really give a very good explanation as to why she left the position of being a director of Home Affairs to become a mere analyst at the Safe Security Agency. At the time, her answer was that she's just so passionate about the Constitution of the Republic that she felt that the Safe Security Agency is the best place for her to go and protect the Constitution. Now, I would venture to say that that is an unsatisfactory explanation. Given the specific current climate and the way South Africans out there perceive the Safe Security Agency at the moment, we're looking at a securitization of South African society. Ordinary members of public feel that Big Brother is all the time watching them and not maybe watching them necessarily in the interest of the state, but in the interest of certain people within the governing party. And therefore, I think we as a committee cannot turn a blind eye to the fact that this candidate chose to be employed by the State Security Agency at this very critical juncture in our journey to becoming a full-fledged, mature constitutional democracy. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Maisera and Honorable Malema.
Thank you, Chair. I think maybe we should learn to put very judgment aside, which is a reflection of personal, moral, and aesthetic values. We are in objective and try to be objective in what we are trying to do here. We judge according to what we know and what is there, what is objective, what we are seeing, not what we think or what we expect. I think she addressed the threefold. I think she's a fit and proper person to hold this office because she's got experience in the office. She's got experience as a civil servant, as my learned friend says. And also, I wouldn't try to repeat what the Prof aptly said about her. I'm just adding what the Prof maybe did not said, which is voluntary in itself, and it's not based on one judgment. She did not know her from Mother Christmas until she saw her, but she was impressed by objectively listening to what she was saying, and that is the correct thing that she said. And I think she understands the twofold lines of society, you know, poverty, unemployment, and inequality, and which are the injustices that were imposed on us and which we live on. We don't read the textbooks what it is. It's our life. It's our life experience. And that is more objective than subjectivity, which maybe we should take aside. And I think the Office of the Public Protector requires a high degree of integrity and best defined by the characteristics of honesty, principle, honor, scrupulousness, reputability, truthfulness, trustworthiness, and uprightness. And this is what she actually displayed in all her life, because if there were anything that could have been pointed out contrary to what I've just said, it would have come out. So let us say that when we find somebody who is not 100% perfect, but who understands and who has actually done the work, we should not pull her down. The fact that she reached the stage where she was one of the five, it means that she passed the litmus test. And here we are to objectively scrutinize all of them and come to the best possible public protector candidate instead of value judgment and expectations and subjectivity. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Malema, then Honorable Breitenthal. Nkunu, have your hand up as well? You want to come in? Okay, Honorable Nkunu, then Swart and Van Dam. Then Honorable Shibambu.
Thank you.
Okay, that's fine. My name is Honorable Malema.
No, after listening to the interview of this candidate, I immediately treated that she is one of the good people, and I was very happy until I received a tip-off that she's actually a candidate for President Zuma, and that Zuma prefers her over others. And I couldn't, you know, through how she presented herself, even buy into that argument. But I also had to immediately remember that Zuma is going at some point, and therefore couldn't be all the time we're supposed to make decisions as if Zuma is a permanent president of this country. So she's going to be a president beyond Zuma's term. And it's going to be a public protector beyond Zuma's term of office. So even if she was Zuma's preferred candidate, he will not be there at some point. But also that we are appointing to an institution, a well-established institution, which has got rules and established practices and independent investigators. And if she tries a shenanigans, the institution itself will expose her for who she is. And that's what makes me to be comfortable to recommend her that she gets appointed. I know many things were said about Chief Justice before he became Chief Justice and how he's so close to the president and all those type of politics. And today he came out to be one of the best. And it looks like today when people want to reject you, they just say, no, Zuma, the Zuma that, and then you run like you got leprosy. Even when you have performed well in an interview. I think just what she did in that interview then dismisses all sorts of rumors we heard about her. And I think that we must give her an opportunity. Honorable Bono put her under huge pressure, and I thought she was going to break and become emotional and all that, because I was interested to see how she's going to come back on those things. And she came back nicely, in a cool-headed manner, clarified. And that's what you need. You need people who, even when put under a difficult situation, they still manage to rise above and provide leadership. If anything, she's very close to what we have today in Honorable Tulima Johnson. So, wherever she is, if she's indeed very close to President Zuma, please run away from those things and concentrate on purposes of the public protector and serve our people, because I agree that we must recommend it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable President Hoff.
You are in my list. You will be coming after Honorable President Hoff.
Honorable President Hoff is giving you an opportunity to speak, Honorable Mthunu.
No.
It's fine when members are able to trade off. It's important, Honorable Manem. We're not going to tell me what to do here. Come on, Honorable Mthunu.
Thank you, Chair. I want to say from the onset that although I'm not part of the committee, I've been following this journey.
Inquiry, Honorable Malema is also, you know. Remember, but you actually gave that, you see that there to flow to Honorable Shifam. Okay, proceed, Honorable Mthunu.
Honorable Chair, with Advocate Mkhwebane Reni, to me she came across as a very strong candidate. In her, I saw a well-rounded person. She's young. She's black, female, and experienced. She's very grounded, honest, and sounded very ethical. And therefore, I strongly recommend her for this position. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm in the chair for a while. I will be very fair. Advocate Grafenbach, it's your song.
Thank you. Who left to me?
I was asked by the chairperson to stand in for a few minutes.
Just a second. Yes. It's difficult to gain the argument in favor of Ms. Mkhwebane. She did have a good interview. She does have legal qualifications and she has some medical experience. However, her experience with senior investigation is overstated, as it has been by some members of the panel. It is not an independent decision-making position in the Office of the Public Protector. And it also is not a managerial position. So she doesn't have any kind of track record for management. If the legal experience of Judge Wynne is time to be watching, then certainly the legal experience of Ms. Mkhwebane must also be time watching. She has been a public prosecutor for 2 years, she's been a legal administration officer, then a researcher, then an investigator, then a director in Home Affairs, where her career has been until now. She's an analyst for the State Security Agency. So there is no question that she doesn't have any semblance of the kind of experience that Judge Wynne has. So her level of experience must certainly be found wanting, but that is not my greatest concern. There's not a lot that sounds wrong with her. But my greatest concern is that she changed jobs from a reasonably high-flying position in Home Affairs as director to a relatively low-level position in the security as an analyst. This is a matter of deep concern for me. I'm very concerned about her bona fides. I've received the same tribbles as the Honourable Malema about her connection to the President, and the concerns are very, very deeply. And she could provide no, I answer that question, she could provide no answer, not even a remotely satisfactory answer. So for that reason, I simply cannot support her as a candidate.
Thank you, Edward Breitenbach, Honourable Swart.
Thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate the concerns, and it is a concern of ours as well,
about the fact that she went from a director of Home Affairs to become an analyst at State Security Agency, and she wasn't able to answer questions in that regard, and it is a matter of concern that we do need to bear in mind. However, that being said, she's probably the candidate that has had the broadest degree of consensus across political lines. And I think that is an important issue as well, as we try to find a consensus candidate. Everyone has pointed out the very positive aspects. I'm not going to labour those then. I just want to point out the serious issue as to the explanation as to why she went from a director of Home Affairs to an analyst at the State Security Agency. The positive side is, however, if you remember Advocate Mashwani, who was previously an ANC Member of Parliament, and when he was appointed public protector and did not investigate the Erdate issue, the courts instructed him what to do. So you always can fall back on the courts, particularly in view of the EFFEA Constitutional Court ruling now that is very clearly set out what the duties are of the public protector. And if there is any, I think the word was used directly, shenanigans, they can be exposed not only by the office themselves, but also in a court of law on review of any decisions that might be suspect. So I think, Chairperson, at this stage, it is a candidate that has probably, to this point, enjoyed the largest degree of consensus amongst everyone here. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Swart, Honourable Van Dam, and then the final one will be Honourable Sean.
Thanks, Acting Chair. I think there's no dispute. She gave a really excellent interview, and I'm quite encouraged by the fact that a young female did so well in an interview. But I'm very uncomfortable with 2 points. The first one is her experience. If we look at the list of the other people that are also shortlisted in the top five, it's people with a lot of legal experience. She's never actually practiced the law. I mean, she practiced for 2 years compared to the other people here. I've got far greater experience of practicing the law. So on that basis, compared to the other people, she does not have the same experience. And if we're going to be fair, we need to make sure that we select someone who has the rigorous experience. She's a civil servant. She's not a lawyer. And the other issue is her working for a state security agency. This past weekend, the executive director, I think it is, of the State Security Agency resigned, citing political interference at the State Security Agency. If the head of that unit is complaining of political interference, that could also be something that she's experienced too, and clearly doesn't seem to have a problem with. So I am a bit worried that, it's not proven, she'll have to explain that to us, that she would have been subject to the political interference and she wouldn't have complained about it. So those 2 points there make me very, very uncomfortable, despite the fact of having had a good interview, the fact that she doesn't have the same experience as the other candidates, and the fact that she works for a state security agency. Thanks, Shane.
Okay. Thank you. I'm told that it's now Honorable Shivam. And I understand Shivam is the last one, right? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think let's take this opportunity. Let's take this opportunity to congratulate the advocate Busisi Mkubana for her imminent appointment as a public protector of protection. But I think there are certain things that we should raise that have to be complied with when she takes office, particularly the things that she spoke about when we're doing the interview with her. You know, the Chief Justice in the judgment that settles the remedial action powers of the public protector said that the public protector is the embodiment of the barrister's David. So we hope that these rumors of her connection to political office bearers at a high level will not make her a biblical Goliath, because there will be a David that emerges from elsewhere. And it will bring her down. So she must be truly a biblical David that will stand against the most powerful and the most well-resourced institutions. There are four things which I think must be priority, and she's one of the very few who spoke about it, the accessibility of the public protector's office to the most rural areas because we need to deal with that. Local officials, mayors, and municipal managers must start to pick up the money as well, but it's disappearing from local government. We need more judgments that are going to stick the local state in terms of what happens, because the AG consistently reveals the fact that a lot of resources that are meant for the people are disappearing somewhere into people's pockets. So we need every protector with power to deal with those issues, but also the utilization of community radio, the public broadcasters will reach out to as many people as possible. It must look into that piece, but also the utilization of SALGA. I think that is one of the few who spoke about the utilization of SALGA to find a way of finding expression. And the other issue is the maximal usage of the resources that are allocated to the public protector's office. I think that depends on the fact that we do not need money to be fundraised from elsewhere. Let's utilize the available resources and build proper government relations, particularly those of the district courts as areas where people can lodge complaints. That must be explored, must be given a practical meaning, so that as many people as possible got access to the public protector office. That is one of the instruments of justice, that you do not pay anything to gain access to justice. If any other way, you need lawyers, you need that and that. So let's expand the office of the public protector to be as reachable as possible. And we think that should play that role meaningfully, because that's what the experience, just got the patience, just got the temperament. I mean, if someone says to you that you don't have the qualification that you have, it's very easy to outburst. But she did not do that when she was told, you don't have the qualification. She stayed calm. She was able to give context to what she stood for. So let us appoint her as a public protector. Well, let's recommend the National Assembly. We hope that the president of the ANC, who happens to be new buildings now, will sign that appointment and then we'll move forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's move on to Advocate Lukaimane. Members, before we move on to Advocate Lukaimane, do you want a 2 minute fresh break? Yeah, because I also had to go out because I couldn't sit here. Thank you. Okay, just 2 minutes, members. Grab something, go to the bathroom or whatever.
Thank you. Let's reconvene. Can I request everyone at the back there? We are reconvening, members. Chamber and your crew. We are reconvening. Thank you, members. Let's move to Advocate Lukaimane. Can I see the hands? Huh? Lloyd is number one. Yes. Honorable Hong, I don't know whether you are going to want to talk because you are sitting right in front of me. Sometimes, only that lucky. Okay. Do you want? Huh? Oh, okay. So far I have Shibambu and Honorable Hall. Is there anyone who wants to speak? Okay, Honorable Pranoff. Any other person? Honorable Bredenbach. Thank you. Over to you, Honorable Shibambu.
No, thank you, Chair. I think Advocate Lukaimane would have been a good candidate, but James is a broader consensus on Advocate Kweban. We must just take it like that. If you are appointing deputies as well, we're going to appoint her as a deputy public protector. She's very good, and I think that she did very well, and she knows what she's done. So even if she had accessibility, she had a detailed framework of how she's going to deal with that. But I think it's the most important component in terms of how we must deal with the people's office. So,
Honorable Shivambu, you give yourself, you bestow on yourself some prerogatives that you don't have.
Okay, members. Honorable Hong?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Apart from the accessibility issue, I think something that must also heavily impress this committee was is her ability to have dealt effectively with the backlogs at the adjudicator's office. We all know that for whatever reasons, maybe they are a victim of their own profile or successes, currently the public protector's office is struggling with backlogs, which from year to year doesn't seem to get dented in any way. In addition to that, this candidate did indeed have also, objectively speaking, a very good interview. In terms of experience, quite possibly she's also not standing at the front of the queue. But I think we as a committee should seriously consider her administrative capabilities to effectively deal with backlogs where she has been up to now. Thank you.
Chairperson, I think she came to the podium about 2 o'clock that morning and she was full of energy. She is a go-getter, there's no doubt about that, but she did the pension as the pension fund adjudicator. She was really excelling. So I want to agree that it was a privilege listening to her, and she is definitely, for me, a candidate that, if she's not appointed here, that will go places in future, there's no doubt about it.
Thank you, Honourable Members, Honourable Peckinpah, and Honourable Swart.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Honourable Ashondong. Don't complain, just speak.
The Honourable Peckinpah is confusing Mr. Majola with Mr. Kamal, but nevertheless, I'd rather come at 2 o'clock in the morning. They do look
around 2-3
in the morning. Yeah,
you are the last one.
Yeah,
but don't worry about
and
that.
They are remarkably alert. It's easy to make the mistake. But, but yes, she has. She left it, but she had a very good interview. She has the distinction of being able to sort out the backlog in the office that she's currently working and very efficiently and effectively, and that's a positive point that the committee should really give some serious thought to. She has a very good temperament. She was impressive in the interview. She's a young person in an intimidating environment. I thought she did very well. She does, however, lack both experience in practice in law, which has been an issue raised by other members, and general experience, so that's something that we should consider. But overall, she's certainly a candidate that one could support.
Okay, thank you very much. Honourable Scott?
So again, yes, without repeating, she had a very good interview, and she's served very well at the pension funds adjudicator, and that is the question that one can also ask when we consider Judge Wiener. Is she not better suited to be at the pension funds adjudicator, where she's done such good work? I think it's also important if we pointed out that the previous candidate was a state security. She also served for 4 years as a general manager at the state security agency, so that also needs to be on the table if it's to be considered at all. But she had a very good interview, and I'm sure that if she would be appointed, she'd be a very good public protector. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable
Matondong Bonin
Gutitunogan,
Thank you very much, Chairperson. If there was to be deputizing at positions, she's really would. Be able to play a very, very meaningful role. Like all the others, I think that we have spoken. I think she had a very good interview and demonstrated great potential.
Members, I just want to warn you with one thing. Please, we have a current public protector, so whatever pronouncement that you are making, just be mindful of that, and he was also one of the candidates. So it's not like we are defining somebody out of, you know, their job. Let's just be careful. Yes, Honorable Fanta.
person. I'm just say that I'm a little bit uncomfortable with the arguments that's being put forward by the colleagues on the committee that
Honorable Mochapo and Bongo that disturbing Honorable Fandam.
Thank you, Chair. The arguments that's been put forward by some of the colleagues here that some women must stay where they are because that's where women are needed. Judge Mina must stay on the bench because there's women needed to stay there. Afotetlu Kaimane must stay at the pension fund adjudicator because women are needed there. If women want to move forward in their career, they should be allowed to. The gender shouldn't be a limitation. And should have said, you're a woman, must stay there. That's where you need it. If women want to move forward, they must move forward. And then Afotetlu Kaimane... Thank you, Chair. Afotetlu Kaimane, I think, was my personally one of my favorite candidates. I'm glad that the allegations of Shebeen owning and assault charges have been discharged with, and that her record is now clear. I also like the fact that she seems to have a keen mind for learning. Her CV is amazing. She's got several legal qualifications. And compared to other candidates, she's very, very well qualified. I thought I should just say, I thought she was one of my favorite candidates, and she'd be very well suited for the position.
Okay, let's leave it at that. Is there any other member who wanted to speak on Advocate Zuckerman? Okay, members, let's move on to Professor Matona. He was one of the last candidates, but he was as fresh as 8 o'clock in the morning. Okay. Thank you, members. Over to you. Honorable Shivambu. Honorable Spade. Shivambu is very impatient. Honorable Shivambu, Honorable Bongo, Honorable Schwab, Honorable Mwabe, Honorable Mshimang, and Honorable Motapu. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. You know, in one of his responses to the question of funding module for the public
property. Honorable Shivambu, I've just been disturbed by Honorable Brayden Draft. You are noted, you will come after Honorable Motapu. And don't interrupt. But he did this thing to me and exploiting the fact that you are sitting in front of me. Okay. Honorable Shivambu.
Thanks. I was saying that in one of his responses to the question about the funding model, Professor Manzola says, Major said, when I was at the Legal Resources Center, I also did a lot of fundraising. And then he said that, so if I am a public protector, I'll go back to some of the functions that I had good rapport with and explain to them the South African democracy and that it's growing and that it needs strengthening. And then he said that I suspect that there will be governments that will be willing to avail some funding. For that reason, a public protector candidate with margins that were going to look for foreign funding to finance a public protector's office must fall. It's as simple as that. He might not be considered for anything. He must go and rethink properly. I was not also impressed by his lack of attention to details in terms of how the public protector's office is structured, what resources it needs, where that money is going to come from. Because when you ask him questions, he says that, well, I'm not aware how the finances work there. I will be briefed if I'm appointed. And he might get there and then we'll be shocked of what is happening there. And we'll have made a mistake. So he must, in the future, when he is nominated for anything, he must familiarize himself with the environment of the job that they want to take over so that when he goes to speak about an interview or explain the details of what he seeks to do, he has got an idea of what is happening. He came to the interview, he was not familiar at all with the Office of the Public Protector. He must continue to teach post-1994 law. That was the story of the Big Vatican. Thank you very much.
Okay. Honorable Bongo.
Well, thank you, Chair. I think the issue of funding is one that I also picked it up. Because part of the things that we raised very sharply as the Justice Commission was to the current public protector was that we discouraged that it must be private funding from other countries. But other than that, it would appear he was nominated for this post
in 2002 and he declined. When I asked why he declined, he said he had to take the international call, which international call got him to be absent from the country for a period not less than 12 years. So the public protector, we need a person who is well versed and concerned with the way the politics are moving in the country, and because by its nature and character this office, it needs somebody to understand the politics of the country, how they are running and what are the shenanigans and how to navigate going forward. So I think other than that, the person, the CV is powerful. A lot of experience. He was once a dean in the Faculty of Law in the University of Limpopo. So I think the legal qualifications are quite impressive. But those are the few other issues. I think we may consider him for admissions. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honourable Members, Honourable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. As the other members have indicated, he's got a very impressive CV. He had a good interview. The key issue for me is that he was the Chief Prosecutor at the UN International Criminal Court. We can be very proud of that fact as a nation. It shouldn't be counted against him. But the nature of this work is that it is investigative, requiring the compilation of investigating documents and then findings on the basis of managing evidence, and it's obviously proven very well. And then he went on to be promoted to Assistant Secretary General and Registrar of the UN International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. And he separated that. He said this is not the International Criminal Court, this was a specific court, which shows managerial skills as well. So I think that he's an eminently qualified person to take up the position, and he indicated that he would be able to hit the ground running. In other words, he doesn't have any outstanding his commissions. He wound up the UN Commission, all management issues there, and he is now available to take up this position immediately. So I would seriously consider that we do consider his appointment as public protector, and he would also satisfy the public or David in many regards as well. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, Honourable Mwabe.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, I'm sure my colleagues would remember that he who proposed the name of this candidate during this election. He was of his senior, which is excellent, as my colleagues have said. But I started to have a problem during the interview when it appears that at some stage he was opposed to avail himself of this position, but declared that it was of, as Lauren Wong had said, the call from the then Secretary of UN, Kofi Annan, that he must come and start immediately. And he opted for that. Now, his priorities to me is a problem, because we need someone who would also show the sense of patriotism. When your country needs you, and you opted for the foreign job, because you view it as maybe much better or senior than what your country needs for, it is a problem. Even as much as it's good and perform good in interviews, but I still stand by my equivalent. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Honourable Sma?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I would strongly endorse the fact which has been put on the table here that he is a very broadly qualified and broadly experienced applicant. I also like the way he listens to questions and then gave answers. I've got the impression that he's a very good listener, and that is very important. However, I was disappointed by his answers to a question by Honourable Swambo, which he was asking to a number of candidates about their contribution to the political struggle in this country.
agree that as a magistrate, his hands were tied. He couldn't do much except to abdicate and then fight from the outside. And he was also a professor of law and eventually a dean. And I remembered all the professors that I know during that time. They really expressed themselves on the abominable nature of apartheid. And they did inspire the students to do what they could to fight apartheid. So he was in the favorable position and he didn't see any reason to fight. That, to me, perhaps was a big negative. Thank you.
Honorable Motsoapo.
Thank you, Jefferson. This is my former dean of law professor at the then University of the North, now Limpopo. A very good
academic. Close there.
Ah, don't worry. We're not very close. A very good academician. I know. A very good academician and with international experience. You know, we have a shortage of professors of law. And some of us would like to do research in this field of law. So I don't think it will be the proper for us to recommend him to this position of public professor, because we'll be depriving future generations of good academicians like Professor Bongani Majola. He must just, you know, stay in this academic fraternity so that he continues the good work he's doing there. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Honorable Motsoapo, Honorable Plekenbach.
Thank you. The interview of Commissioner Majola was conducted, as you rightly said, around 2:15 in the morning. He'd been locked up the whole day. He hadn't had an opportunity to take a nap. He was locked up the whole day. And he came to the interview at that time of the morning and was gracious. He had an outstanding CV. He has got impeccable legal qualifications. And he's got an incredible list of achievements. He's represented this country with distinction at the United Nations and rose to the rank of Assistant Secretary General. That's something that we should be proud of, not punishing for. He in fact didn't say that he chose that job above the public protector's job. He said he'd already committed to that job and wasn't prepared to go back on his word. That's an admirable quality. It's not something you punish someone for. He has investigative experience, has managerial experience, has prosecutorial experience. Those are all issues that he would need to do the job of public protector in a competent fashion. The fact that he said he might look for funding from donors or international level, that's just, it's something that the current public protector often says. It's not something we like, and it won't be allowed, and of course he can't do it because there's no room for him to do it, and so it's something that he will just have to not do, and you'll be informed, sir, if he's appointed by, they've got a very competent CEO in that office, and I have no doubt that you will inform him very quickly and very quickly about the position. That's really not something to hold against, not even remotely realistic to hold against him. Regarding the comments that he may have been a little backward in coming forward during the apartheid years in fighting or defending his people, let me just refer you back to his questionnaire. He said in paragraph 21.3 on page 5 of his question, I'm self-oriented and have experience dealing with issues affecting the poor. During my 6 years at the Legal Resources Center, I was part of an organization whose mission and interventions were aimed at protecting the powerless and the marginalized in our society, and his rights were either violated or ignored. So he spent his time as a lawyer fighting for his people in the best way that he could, as a lawyer. He used his skills that were being able to be used. To now punish him for that, again, I think is unrealistic, unfair, and disingenuous. So, in my view, Professor Majola was, apart from Judge Wien, who I do think is the best candidate, Professor Majola is certainly a very, very, very close second, and I don't know that they should support him for this position.
Now, it seems like we have other hands.
Honorable Maifelat and Honorable Malema.
Thank you, Tom.
Honorable Shabambu, you've already spoken on this country. Honorable Juan, you have spoken on this country. Okay.
I respect my debtors, and the prophet was definitely one of them. But I try to ask him some leading questions so that he can educate us about what he knows better and what he spent half of his life doing about the questions of the Great Lakes region, where he spent half of his time there. That it is a question of land and ethnocentrism that causes all these problems. But he didn't seem to understand what I was talking about. He was just thinking about the court and prosecution. That somebody killed somebody. He didn't worry about why somebody took a panga or a cutlass and cut somebody's head. Right? So we lost a learning session from him, a man who professes his subject so aptly, but he was just thinking about prosecution and enforcing the law. And when we asked him about that, a public protector is not a crime busting unit, it's a reconciliatory and adjudicatory court from organization that try to bring people together and try to find out what causes people to do certain things. And we asked him, tried to lead that he could have done better if he would explain how he would have mediated between students banning universities and the university and the government to find out what caused the problem, what is the cause of the problem and what is to be done. And I realized that maybe the way people are socialized to practice law is just to explain it or define it according to what is written in the book, not informed by practical experience out there. So maybe Prof can tell us here whether academia and practical experience actually sometimes go together, or you have to get from academia and learn the parts of the world out there and to be able to be streetwise or to be able to do what you are expected to do, because I don't think this particular post of public protector is strictly going according to what the law says. The law says you are guilty or you are not guilty, and there is just black and white. Or, not black and white. Is that right or wrong? There is nothing in between. It's not something that where you are a little bit right and more wrong or whatever. It is just right or wrong. So in this particular post, we expect somebody who will understand the causative agents of miscruency or the breakage of law. You break the law because there are certain things that push you to break the law. Nobody just wants to say, I just want to be a thug and stay in town, in jail. Is there social parameter that forces you to break the law? So we need somebody who can understand all those things in order to be a better arbiter in this thing. So I feel that he did his best, but his best was not best enough.
Thank you, Honorable Dr. Maizela. Honorable Malem?
No, Chair, I'm worried that the honorable advocate can say it is acceptable for a person to just come here and answer the questions by just saying, he was just saying. I mean, how do you accept the people who are just saying? Because here you ought to speak to the operations of the office and know what you can do and cannot do. Now, it really confirms what Honorable Shivambo said, that he had no idea what that office is about. And hitting the ground run means you must know what is expected from you. So we can't have a candidate who is still going to be taught that, no, you can't go and raise money from outside the country, from other agencies. That's not a place to learn. We need people who are going to take over from the current public protector. And the issue of having participated in the struggle, especially during those difficult times, It's a very important issue, and it's a very emotional issue to many of us. It cannot just be dismissed as we have contributed through our law participation. It goes far beyond that. What have you written as a professor about the immorality of apartheid? What role was you played to agitate the students? Where were you when TEFLOP, the whole of TEFLOP, was involved in a struggle? There's literally not a single person in TEFLOP who has not contributed, who were there at the time. But if God decides a person in a strategic position, you can locate him anywhere in the struggles of TEFLOP. So, it means he didn't see anything wrong. He thought this was normal. The government had to do what the government was doing. TEFLOP was converted into a military base. The guy didn't see anything wrong. That's why he couldn't even take his rightful place in the struggle. So, read or thank you.
I will hear you. Honorable Hon.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I think just to reiterate the point that even the current public protector, who I think South Africa by and large held in high regard, had to learn on the job that the bonus funding is at best frowned upon and at worst not permitted in terms of our legislation. So to hold that statement against this candidate, I don't think is really fair. But Chair, the issue I really want to address is this whole issue of, on the one hand, maybe the suggestion that this candidate was not patriotic in making a decision to go and serve outside of the country for 12 years. And whilst it definitely, in my opinion, added to his personal development, I think the Honourable Breitenbach was quite correct in saying that he also represented the country there. And I think the one thing we ultimately maybe all have lose sight of, and it was mentioned by, I think, the Honourable Bonga, that he sees it as a problem that the absence of this candidate led to a situation where, to quote him, he is not understanding the current politics. The fact is we have a demand placed on the public protector by the Act itself to act without fear, favour or prejudice. So as a matter of fact, we do not want a candidate whose judgment could be or will be clouded by his or her understanding of the current politics. And whilst I understand Dr. Maishela's argument that this candidate could not illustrate a broader understanding of the social issues at the Great Lakes area, but the contrary to that argument is that I think it must stand this candidate in good state that what he did ultimately was apply the law as a prosecutor to the facts he found. Because ultimately we also do not want a public protector who will take into account the social conditions that may be lead to public officials making themselves guilty of maladministration or corruption. We want maladministration or corruption to be dealt with without favour or prejudice. And we can no longer allow a situation that the explanation that social conditions may lead to maladministration or corruption is existing. It can never be justification. So if they are looking for a candidate whose judgment can be clouded by his understanding of the social ills in our society, we're looking for the wrong candidate. Ultimately, I think this candidate, in the early hours of this morning, demonstrated a gravitas and a stature that I think very few, if any, of the other candidates had. And therefore, I understand some of the other arguments regarding the struggle and so on. I think if we look objectively at the aura of this candidate, he most definitely will be the equal of the current public protector in if he has to step into that office and perform the duties. Thank you.
Members, we have now reached this stage where we really have to make a decision. And let me remind you that I had appealed members that as much as possible would like this process to be, you know,
through a consensus, you know, that we agree on one candidate as all artists. There were arguments raised for and against for Judge Wena, and this list, I mean, whatever is raised, by the way, we must not, it does not mean that whatever arguments that we have, you know, whether for or against, are acceptable to all the members. They may be understood. So I just want to get a view from those who were feeling strongly about that winner, whether we should keep her or whether we should drop her at this stage. I want to see the parties. Which parties are saying we must keep Judge Wena? Okay, so I'm taking it that we are agreeing that she's going, okay? Let's move on to Judge Desai. There were parties. No, members. Honorable Malema, you know we had some peace here. We had some peace. Yeah. Okay. Listen, we have arguments for and against for Judge Desai. And I want to ask those that have advanced the argument for Judge Desai whether they agree to stand down. Okay, members are saying let him keep the benefit. Okay, so Judge Desai falls. Okay. As for the team Kwebane, we had those that were, in fact, almost every day you had a lot to say that's positive about him, but for those that felt that we shouldn't consider her, are they persuaded to consider her? Okay, the PA is not persuaded.
I just want to
let
say,
me allow just one of you.
Yeah.
Because you've all had an opportunity to say
I something. Think for now we will reserve our position on this. But is he voting?
Sir?
I'm not voting. I'm taking my position. Thank you.
No,
right?
Not
now you're voting. Now you're voting, sir. Now you're voting. Those who are not voting must keep quiet.
No, no, we must start with you.
Yes.
We must start with you.
And I was begging you.
We must start with you. Okay. President Park, up and down. One of you. Okay. Honorable
Park. We're reserving our position on this candidate.
They are reserving, the PA is reserving their comments on this candidate, but otherwise, all the other parties, they are in agreement. Okay. Then, Advocate Lokaimane, there has been a lot of suggestion that, yes, in future she may be considered, you know, but not necessarily at this stage. Is that the argument, members?
Yes.
Okay, and Claude Majola, there were arguments for and against, and what is the feeling of the House, especially for those that were pushing for this particular candidate? Are you persuaded to keep him, or are you persuaded to drop him? Okay, so we have the DA that has reserved its comment on Kwebane, and they would like to keep Prof. Majola. And members, I don't want to subject this process to a vote. To me, it's very clear that all the parties are in agreement with advocating Kwebane. Is that okay? Except for the DA, and I think we will have to capture that as such. Okay. Is this the final decision of the committee that Advocate Kwebane is the name that we are going to table to the National Assembly to be voted for by the National Assembly? And members, I must also remind you, this position requires 60% of the members of the National Assembly, which means that it requires 240 members, and the ANC has 249. Come on, let's be honest. Okay, members, okay. I accept that. We've noted you. Members, I think, let me just say this, members. I'm not taking your contributions lightly.
And I think one has to appreciate that this was not a easy process. And for you to have been able to at least agree to even concede where you thought there were strong arguments against your own favorable candidate, to me that is a sign of maturity, and I congratulate you for that. And members, except for the DA, we are going to take the report to the House. Members, just one thing, we are going to now sit together. I'm going to have time with the administration to prepare a comprehensive report. We will need probably some time next week, every next week, to prepare a report, and we will try to send it to you in advance. We have to speak this week. Okay, I'm just going to let the administration to work out, and if there are other inputs that we do want to submit, please do may email them to Bonani or to myself so that we can as much as possible eliminate yes, Honorable Shifan?
Chairperson, the process of programming of Parliament is that the chief groups forum. There must be an agreement on which item goes into the National Assembly for tabling. And the chief group forum said today there isn't any consideration of the particular report. So let's ask the chief group forum to say we can table the report finally perhaps next week, Thursday. And then in between that time, we will ourselves as the committee consolidate the report. You can do the draft, we may comment and meet for a brief moment to close on it and
okay.
After the National Assembly
I think
that on Thursday.
That is a sound suggestion, members. Do you have something that is fundamentally different, Honorable Motabo or Turkey?
And as resolution, we are supposed to report on or before the 31st. And the 31st is Wednesday, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we need a sort of maybe you can assist condonation or
yeah, okay. I think let's do it on Wednesday, but between now and then we will have to work very hard, members, to consolidate the information. We'll send you the draft, and if there are comments, you can send the comments, okay? But you must remember that we are also going to have the opportunity to debate. If there will be that opportunity. So members, I think we are actually almost done. One thing I also wanted to say, which I think is very important, and I think it was brought up by Honorable Malema. You know, ultimately members, I have said the thing previously. We will appeal to whoever that eventually, once we table this report, they must remember that they are expected to act independently without fear, favor, or prejudice. And we really appeal to who, if Busisiwe Mkhwebane makes it, she must find her own moral compass. In the event she is finding herself in a dilemma, and I'm hoping that this message has been unambiguous from all the members of the committee. I thank you, members. We shall advise you of that brief meeting before the tabling. Thank you.
As a point of evidence.
Thank you. Sir, you have thanked us for the way we cooperated for the success of this process. But I want to say that the success that has been achieved is due mainly to your leadership. Thank you very much for being such a wonderful leader.
We need more guys like you. This parliament will function for us. Please.
Yeah, because the
I'm going to go to the next slide.